Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And hello, everyone, and thank you. And it is also your holiday season coming up here. Oh, my goodness. What happened to 2017? Can you believe it, folks? We're past Thanksgiving and now heading into the big holiday. However you celebrate it, I hope it's joyous and it's wonderful for you. And I was looking as I was watching the different things that passed my desk. Anything that had to do with holiday or the holidays coming up, I wanted to make sure that we covered it because generally a lot of things happen and come out I don't think about, but it will affect your life. And this thing came up, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Now, let me tell you what the headline said when I got this information. And I was just kind of shocked because I couldn't believe it, that 26 million Americans are victims of holiday package thieves. These are the people that come up on your porch and steal what you have. If there's a package, they'll steal the package. It's amazing. And not just one time, 26 million of us will be impacted. That's just a phenomenal number. So I said, look, how can I tell you about this in a way that might make a difference and keep you and keep your packages safe? And that's when I was informed that Laura Adams, who is senior insurance analyst at insurancequotes.com, has a thing or two to say about this. And I asked if she would join me, and she has indeed. Good morning. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you told me it was, I know that you're an insurance analyst, but you were also, what was that other thing that you said to me that I should?
Yeah.
What was it? What was that?
I'm the host of the Money Girl podcast, so I'm a personal finance expert and author and do a lot of work in the insurance space. We like to dig out very interesting information that has to do with how consumers can stay better informed and save money.
Laura, when you looked at the numbers, what did you think? 26, that's not an exaggeration. That's a ton of people.
Yeah, it is. So this study that Insurance Quotes did recently shows that 8% of Americans, or 26 million, have had a holiday package stolen. And this is only getting more and more to be a problem because this year, online sales have surpassed retail or local sales for holiday shopping.
Okay.
So that means a lot of packages are coming to our doorsteps, either for ourselves or for gifts that we're buying for other people. And that means that we've got to watch out, make sure that these thieves that we're seeing are not going to affect us personally. But the idea is that if you do have a package stolen or something is vandalized, hopefully you have enough insurance to pay for that product.
Okay, and before I get to that cure, what the cure is, let me ask you this, because I can only imagine what you think about the possibilities of having somebody who can have a key, who can pull up to my door and through some technique open my door and put the package inside. You like that?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I don't know how well it's going to catch on. I think there's some people that will love it, and I think there are a whole lot of people that will say, wait a minute, I don't know if I want a strange person in my home.
And Laura, tell me, exactly the point. Are you saying that you are comfortable with some dude or gal that you don't know driving a truck, comes up to your house, walks up, not only is there on the porch, but can open your front door and stick something inside there and maybe have a biscuit that you left on the counter? What do you think?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It really is. I don't think I'm ready for that personally, but I'll say if you are and you're willing to give it a shot, just make sure you've got insurance, because if they steal something or something is damaged, you need to have either a renter's policy or homeowner's insurance that's high enough to cover that potential damage and liability.
Yeah, no, and I understand the insurance. We can talk about that, but is insurance the only protection I have against this happening to me?
Well, one way that you can think about holiday packages is try to get them delivered somewhere else. So let's say you can get them delivered to your workplace.
Okay.
Or maybe you can have a neighbor who could get your packages. If a neighbor's at home during the day, have them look after your packages if you're at work when they're being delivered. Or maybe even have things delivered on the weekend if you're working during the week. So those might be some workarounds that will help you avoid this holiday package package theft issue that we're dealing with during the holidays.
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking for. As I said, I know that we can get the insurance. By the way, does it cost me an additional fee or a higher premium to pay for protecting my front door from getting my Christmas? Or is that such a small incidence that despite the numbers, that it doesn't make a difference to the insurance company?
It's covered. You know, that's one thing you do need to know. If you have something stolen or even something vandalized in your home, that is covered with insurance. Now, whether you would actually make the claim depends on the value of the damage. If it's above your deductible, then you want to consider it. But if it's lower than your deductible or really close to it, it may not make sense to make a claim.
Okay, let me tell you what I think you're going to say to me when I called and claimed that the guy stole the sofa out of my front door because he was out of my house because I let him in. You're going to say, you let somebody into your house? Is that covered too?
It is covered.
Wow.
If somebody is in your home and they steal something or damage something, that's why we have insurance. So that is some peace of mind, you know, although it may be whether the idea of it may be something that you're not comfortable with to begin with.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, it's the world we live in. When we come back, we'll talk more about that and ways we can protect ourselves. My guest, Laura Adams, is here with us, the senior insurance analyst for InsuranceQuotes.com. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network, and we'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about, or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
It should be a happy, happy time for you. But as you hear from Laura, more than 26 million Americans are going to have their Christmas gifts ripped off their porch by so-called porch pirates. They're just common thieves who are standing by and they will rip you off. But as Laura says, the good news, folks, is that your insurance that you have should cover this if you have homeowner's insurance. Is that what it's called, homeowner's insurance, right?
That's it. Or if you've got a renter's policy, a lot of renters don't have insurance. So this might be a good wake-up call for them to go ahead and get insurance, particularly if you've got a lot of packages and things that could be stolen this time of year.
Let me ask this question as well, because obviously it's going to come up, or it has come up to the insurance industry. We've got these new machines now that sit in our houses that we can buy, and we can tell them what we want them to do, whatever it is, play this or do that. But those things are hackable, very hackable, according to my sources. So what does the insurance company have to say about that?
If there is damage that occurs in your home, maybe somebody is able to, let's say, hack a device or an appliance in your home and causes damage, that is covered by insurance. So it's certainly a new type of issue that insurance companies are dealing with. But I know that it will be a growing problem as these devices become more popular.
How tough is that for the insurance company to keep up with? The technology allows us to do a lot of things that we only dreamed about a few years ago. And now the insurance industry has got to figure out ways to cover this, Laura.
Absolutely. So cybercrime and all of the issues that go along with the Internet of things, you know, all the things in our home that could cause problems or damage, it is covered by insurance, and it is something that they are having to really craft into their policies and outline more carefully. So this is something that you want to ask about when you're shopping for renter's insurance or homeowner's insurance. Look for what type of protections that you have related to cybercrime, identity theft. A lot of these things are now being included in policies.
Okay, and that's I guess that's the question then. As a homeowner, when I come in or when I get my policy, I guess the thing that I should do is list out what I have or what I think I'm going to have to make sure that that those items are properly covered or are covered. Is that the way to do it?
Absolutely. So you want to start with a really simple home inventory and lump together all the things that you've got, you know, artwork, collectibles, furniture, housewares. So you don't have to list every plate or every fork or spoon, but kind of lump things together into what you've got and give it an estimated value. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've got jewelry or valuables, you may need to get those appraised so that you have a very accurate representation of those values.
Okay.
But you create a list of those things, and that's how you base the insurance that you get on your personal belongings. So if those belongings are damaged or, you know, they're destroyed completely in a fire, you would be able to see, okay, here are all the things that I have or had, and this is the value that I need. Otherwise, it would be really hard to remember, you know, everything that was destroyed in a fire.
Right.
So it's a good idea to list that. And then if you get something new and expensive, add that to your list.
Okay, so keep that list current and up to date, and then it makes it a lot easier for you to validate your claim. Is that how it works, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing that is very daunting. If you do need to make a big claim, you're dealing with a tragedy, some kind of disaster, and all of a sudden you've got to list out everything that you own. That can be really difficult. So take the time now to do that and just keep it in a safe place. Maybe keep it on a flash drive or store it somewhere in the cloud so that it's there if something does happen to your home or your personal possessions.
We're talking with Laura Adams. She's Senior Insurance Analyst with InsuranceQuotes.com. Now, here's my question about these gifts, okay, because somebody is sending you something that you don't know what it is or know about it, and it's delivered to your porch, and a porch pirate steals it. How do you evaluate that? How do I convince you, the insurance company, that I should be reimbursed for something that I've never seen?
Yeah, it's a great question. So if you've got information from the giver about what it was, let's say it was something that's quite valuable that was stolen. Once it's delivered to your property, you are the owner of it. You own it and your insurance will cover it. So it's just up to you to prove what the value was and make that claim. So you are covered, and that should give you a lot of peace of mind.
Okay, so if my gift sender says, I sent you $1,000 something, I need to see the receipt get the receipt from them, I guess, to prove to the insurance company that the value of what I'm claiming.
That's it. All you need is the proof of the purchase and the value of that item, and that's all you need to make the claim.
Laura, I hope nobody takes anything off of your porch and mine. Let's have a very Merry Christmas or Happy Holiday. Thank you so much for joining us. God bless you, and have a great season.
Thank you.
Okay. Coming up next, do you know anything about subscribing to cars rather than purchase? What does that mean? John Sterrell will be with us in just a moment. Stay with us. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and I thank you on this beginning of the holiday season. Thank you for joining us and hope that everything is going your way, that you have made all of your purchases and you've had nothing but fun, and you're now in a position of deciding on getting a car. And you're trying to decide whether to quote unquote, and I love this term, I hadn't heard it before, subscribe. What are you talking about? Subscribe. There's a company called Swap-A-Lease. It's called mobility as a service, and there's a growing trend why people would rather subscribe to a vehicle as opposed to actually buying one. Now, I don't know how you subscribe, or maybe I do. I just don't understand what Scott Hall is talking about. But Scott is my guest. He's Executive Vice President of SwapALease.com. He joins us from Cincinnati. Scott, how are you today?
Hey, doing really well today.
Is this just terminology that I'm listening to? Are we talking about leasing a car when we talk about subscribing to a car?
Well, I think the best way to look at it is like this. You know, forever and ever, there's been loans on vehicles, then leases were introduced on vehicles, and you can almost think of subscriptions as kind of the next phase of vehicle financing is kind of a good way to look at it, in my opinion.
Okay. Again, so to my audience, when you say subscribing, you're talking about leasing on a different way or in the same way?
Well, in a standard lease situation, you're leasing a particular vehicle for a specific amount of time.
Right.
Typically, in a lease, you might see a 3-year term would be something that would be very standard.
Okay.
The idea of a subscription would be that you would pay a monthly fee, which of course would be similar to a lease payment or a regular car payment.
Right.
However, within that subscription, you typically would have the ability to switch between different vehicles over that subscription period, and have access to things that will better meet your needs on a daily, weekly basis, depending on how that particular service might be set up. Obviously, there's going to be some different nuances and what have you, but the general idea would be you would have access to a pool of vehicles for a specific amount of time.
So if I bought my, if I subscribed to my vehicle through you, I would be able, if I wanted to change cars somewhere along the line, change whatever vehicle it is, and use something else under that same document.
Well, keeping in mind what we do here at Swapalease is we are a brokerage service that helps people get in and out of car leases. Okay, so we're very much leaning towards a subscription model. However, we are not a subscription model at this point. The subscription model idea is something you're just seeing coming out, and there's a company or two out there testing it. That's kind of a slightly different thing that we do or than we do. However, it is very similar, and there's very there's quite a few parallels, if you will, with the idea of leasing a vehicle, too, when you come to a subscription model.
Well, Scott, come on. Look, these are people listening who probably are very interested in understanding how this works. So help us out here. It's not what you do, but your information comes under Swapalease and under this subscription. So what's the difference?
Well, here's one of the main differences with a subscription. Again, it gets back to the flexibility, and that's really kind of the premise of Swapalease as well. What we've learned in our nearly 20 years of existence is the entire car industry is moving towards more flexibility, more variety, and what have you. Okay, especially as more technology is being introduced into vehicles, that's something that's really been driving car sales over the last several years. The beauty of a subscription model would be this: let's imagine that your standard driving would be commuting to work on a daily basis, and you might want a small, efficient vehicle and or maybe even a small SUV, which obviously is a very hot vehicle segment right now. Now, at some point, you may say, you know what, I'm going to be on vacation for a week, and this Toyota Corolla or maybe this Toyota RAV4, that's not just, that's not going to be a real comfortable car as I drive down to Florida from Cincinnati, just using a local example.
Sure, sure, okay.
For that period, I'd like to get into, maybe a big luxury car such as a Cadillac or a Lincoln.
Okay.
Or maybe we're taking another family with us and I need to use a Suburban or something, along those lines, a large SUV.
Okay.
With a subscription, you generally would have the ability to say, for this period of time, I need to get into this type of vehicle. And that's really the beauty of that type of system is that flexibility it would provide you.
Okay.
So another good example that somebody gave me the other day was they were doing their landscaping and said how much they'd be great to have a pickup truck for the weekend to get their yard cleaned up before winter gets here. Just another example of how that ability to switch between vehicles can be a really good thing for consumers.
Yeah, it's fascinating. When I come back, I want you to tell me what it happens, how it changes my lease or what my lease has to say, what happens to my car. Does it a fair? Is it an even exchange, or do I have to pay more or less? How does insurance cover all of that? We want to know more about because people are interested in it. As you say, we're moving in different directions, and this is one of them. We'll be right back with Scott, and we'll talk more about Swapalease. Stay with us.
You be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Barry.
The world is changing, folks. You can now order somebody to come in and open your door and put his gift inside your house and close it, do you think? And leave it everything else in place. Trying to beat those who would steal off of your porch. 26 million Americans victims of holiday package swapping. Package pirating. But then on a larger scale, your automobile. So you've been driving this car for God knows how long, and you have it on a Swapalease deal or something like that, and you need something else for a month. So you turn your car in, and you get the truck or the limo or whatever it is that you think you need for the next 30 or 60 days. Scott Hall is here to tell us how that works. Is that possible? I could do that, Scott?
With swap a lease is a little bit different setup than that. Let me explain that real quick. And but let me also explain how that could the scenario you just gave could be utilized through a subscription model. That's definitely a possibility. What we do at swap a lease is we help people get in and out of automotive leases. And we've created an online marketplace to do that. So a really easy way to think of us, and I do say this a little bit jokingly, is we're like a dating service for car leases. We want to match people up who want to get out of their leases with people who want to get into their leases. Most leases are somewhere in the length of about 36 months when it comes to the term of the
right,
lease.
Right, okay.
And very average term. We see a lot of vehicles on our site that have 12 to 18 months left. It's not to say that we don't see vehicles with 3 and 6 months left as well. That's just okay. not the heart of our system.
Right, I got it.
And of course, we help. What we'll do is we'll match those individuals up. We'll get them in contact with their leasing company, and we'll make sure all the T's are crossed,
yeah,
the I's are dotted, and they're not going to run into any trouble. And that's either the person getting out or the person getting
okay,
in.
Okay, so you fill in the holes. I'm not a lease person, right? I'm a businessman. I'm a whatever. I'm a doctor. I just want to be able to call you and say, fix this for me. And what you say, you guys are fixers in terms of finding out what I want and if it's possible, and if so, how to get it done. Is that what Swap a Lease does?
That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
Now, kind of taking that to the next level is we would have the subscription model, which is a relatively new idea. I mean, when it comes to automotive financing, that would even be a step above and beyond in terms of flexibility. And you hit it well just a moment ago. If you needed a particular type of vehicle for a relatively short period, maybe it's a couple weeks, maybe it's 30 days, maybe it's 60 days, whatever it might be, but you should be able to match up what your current vehicle needs are with a vehicle from the correct segment,
okay,
be it a truck, an SUV,
sure,
an economy car, whatever it might be.
That's where we're headed, or that's where some of the industry has already gotten to. A lot of people are listening and want to know how this works. Is there a place that can reach out to you and get more information?
Absolutely. We have a lot of information about leasing and other methods of automotive financing on our site at swapalease.com. That's simply three words run together, swapalease.com. In addition to the information that we have on our website, we also have a whole call center full of leasing experts that answer a lot of questions on everything leasing. So we are definitely a call center full of leasing experts that can help answer any questions that would be surrounding the leasing process of an automobile.
Okay, and who's most likely you found to use your service, and also who's headed toward mobility?
Well, two different questions there. Using our services, we basically see people come to us in three different buckets. We have people that need to get out of their lease for financial reasons, want to get out of their lease as a result of finding a new vehicle that they like better, and also the third bucket being lifestyle changes. A quick example of that might be a young couple with a Corvette convertible, and they find out the stork's going to be visiting their house. They need to get out of that into something more practical.
Right, right.
Now, so we see a fair number, quite a difference in age range and demographic differences on swap lease because, as you're probably aware, in 2016, people leased nearly one-third of the new vehicles sold,
yeah,
in the United States.
Right.
So that's a pretty big segment of folks.
Now,
sure is. When it comes to the subscription model, I believe the early adopters of this type of process will be your millennials in many cases. Now,
okay,
I won't say there won't be some older folks as well, but
but it fits the millennial lifestyle more today, is what you're saying, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you're aware, and I'm sure you've talked about previously,
yeah,
millennials, frankly, in many cases, don't really care about owning things. They just want to have use of things, and something it's very convenient for them. And,
absolutely, man. They don't like cable. They don't have cable, and they don't own cars. But they don't mind going down and getting rent a car, and they'll do that. It's just they look at it totally different, don't they?
Yeah, they do, and I'm not saying it's a negative. It's just kind of a whole other way to a whole other perspective, if you will, of what we're maybe more used to.
But you guys can handle that, if I understand from how you described it. You kind of fit. It's a niche, and you can handle that market.
We absolutely can, and we are seeing more and more younger folks coming into our marketplace every day, and we're hearing more and more interest in the idea of subscription models when it comes to vehicles. And again, a lot of this is being driven just because of the increase in technology that we're seeing in vehicles. And, people don't want to necessarily have to worry about maintaining a vehicle over time, a vehicle over time, depending on where they might live, being in an urban area, perhaps.
Scott, we're talking with Scott here, Scott Hall, Executive Vice President of Operations for SwapALease.com. He's told you how to reach out to him, SwapALease.com. Why is it so difficult, or is it difficult, to get out of a lease on your car or truck or whatever you have?
Well, it's not necessarily difficult to get out of a car lease at any point in time. It can simply be expensive. Okay, so no differently than when you or when many of the listeners have went to trade in their vehicle, even if it was under a normal loan or what have you. It doesn't really matter the financing, how it was set up. But, you're going to have a value on that car, right, and then you're going to have a payoff on that vehicle.
And you work all of that out. If I call you and say, look, man, make this happen for me, that's what you do.
Well, not exactly. That's the beauty of our system. As opposed to having to worry about what type of equity position you are in at any point in time in your lease, because typically speaking, you're going to be in a negative equity position, meaning you owe more on that vehicle than what it's worth.
Okay.
That's where it gets expensive. And the beauty of SwapALease is you're simply transferring that lease payment over from where you leave off to the next individual. The vehicle is not being refinanced, so nobody's taking that extra hit. And that's really the beauty of the system. We're using the same lease before and after the transfer, and someone is simply picking up the remaining terms of that lease contract.
It's fascinating stuff, and you've told people how to reach out. Take care of them when they call you, and they will. And take care of yourself and your business, and thank you for joining us, Scott. Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Hey, man, enjoy. Enjoy Cincinnati, if you can. I love the time. Teasing. Okay, love the city. We'll be right back with more. Stay where you are, folks. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry.
Want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about, or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
That's not our normal theme, is it? But this is not a normal time of year either, is it? This is when we celebrate Christmas. And really, that was originally the purpose of this date, Christmas. Now we call it the holiday season because we throw in everybody else every conceivable way. And that's understandable in a country like ours, a great country where we give everybody a fair chance to be a part of the holiday season. But what about that Christmas? That's Christmas. You ever think about the name, folks? Christ is the basic name of Christmas. That's the root of the name. And we're not going to, I'm not going to violate the old kennels about not talking and preaching, but I'm not also going to ignore what the holiday season is about. What was Thanksgiving about? Do you know? Was it just a time to have turkey, or was there a purpose to say thanks to those around you and to share? Christmas is a time to celebrate. Nobody knows that any better than my next guest, Dr. Howard Eddington, served as a senior minister of the First Presbyterian Church, was televised and did a weekly television show broadcast to millions in Florida and Georgia. He received a Master of Divinity from Louisville Presbyterian Theological Seminary for Biblical Studies in Israel. He has been awarded. He is just probably one of the most educated people I've ever had on this program, and certainly one of the most religious. And we're delighted to welcome Dr. Howard Eddington, author of The Forgotten Man of Christmas and some discoveries about Joseph and Mary and the Christmas story. Howard, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Paul, very much. I'm honored to speak with you, and I certainly appreciate the service you've rendered to this country. Well, bless you for that.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. It always is to have those who make the contributions to us in terms of remembering the moral authority that we should have in this country. And some folks would tell you that that moral authority sometimes is threatened. But you wrote the book. Why did you write the book? I mean, what was the purpose here?
Let me. It's a very personal reason, and let me just share that with you briefly. The book arose out of a deep personal tragedy. My wife, Tricia, and I lost our 22-year-old son, John David, in an automobile accident right at Christmas time. And that has marked Christmas for us ever since. And once you lose somebody like that in your family, you don't get over it. The pain is always there. So we were trying to find ways to turn our unbearable grief into a bearable sorrow. And Tricia said, you know, you love Christmas and John David loved Christmas. What if you write a Christmas book? Maybe that will help to honor him and his life and also help us to deal with the circumstances of our own personal pain. So the book arose out of a painful situation, but it has accomplished what she felt would be a good thing, and that is it's given us something to focus on. And once I began to dive into the all of the elements of the Christmas story, I suddenly realized Joseph really gets short shrift in the celebration of Christmas. He's there, but he's not there.
Right.
Nobody ever talks about him. And if you look at the Bible, he never speaks a word. He is a man of action, not words. When God speaks to him, he responds. And the story that unfolds from there is quite remarkable. And so the deeper I got into it, the more I realized that there were parallels there that needed to be explored and brought to the fore. Now, one other little thing. My three children are all adopted. And suddenly it dawned on me that Joseph had nothing to do with the biological process of Jesus. But he did become a father to Jesus. And the term that I use in the book is he is a designated father. He is designated by God to be the father of Jesus Christ. And in that same sense, I'm designated by God to be father to my children. So I found my heart being wound up in the unfolding drama of Joseph's story. But what came through to me repeatedly was, here is a man who is just an ordinary carpenter, but oh my gosh, he has an extraordinary faith, and he is completely obedient to God. He does precisely what God instructs him to do, and he has to face colossal situations, complicated situations, tragic situations, threatening situations, and out of it all, he becomes, at least in my view, a true hero, a man who is an ideal husband and an ideal father, and a man whom we have not given enough credit to. So that's the purpose of the book, and I hope that as the story unfolds, that it begins to encourage people to take another look at the true essence of the Christmas story and gain from it what you and I both know to be the real power of the Christmas message.
Yeah, and it's a very powerful message, and somehow it's gotten lost in the process by those who should be those who do believe in the Bible and believe in Christmas. In them, it seems to be lost. But what about all those other folks who don't necessarily? What's the message for them? When we come back, we'll continue with Howard Eddington, author of The Forgotten Man of Christmas. Is that you? When we come back, we'll have more. Stay with us. Listening to Home and Family Finance. I am your host, Paul Berry. I admit to being a Christian, and I'm very proud of that. But I would be just as proud and happy if I were Muslim, or if I were Jewish, or if I were anything that people have a firm belief in, the good of man and the good of man to his brother. All of that seems to me to make sense, but here we are at quote-unquote the holiday season. We don't even call it the Christmas season anymore. And that's got to be of some concern to Howard Eddington, who was author of The Forgotten Man of Christmas. He had a man of faith, a Christian who believes in messages that come certainly from the Bible. But everybody doesn't believe in the Bible or read the Bible, Howard. So how do we cover this in a way that people feel fulfilled, people feel blessed, people care about the message that you have?
I would suggest that one of the things that I tried to do in working out the details of The Forgotten Man of Christmas was to acknowledge the cultural realities of the time in which it took place, and to acknowledge the fact, once again, I mentioned this earlier, this was one ordinary man, just an ordinary carpenter. He was about 19 or 20 years of age, and suddenly he is thrust into this amazing, swirling sequence of events that would have done in a lesser person. So he must have had some deep individual strength and goodness. And one of the things that I try to point to as I work through the book is not so much to follow the dictates of the story in looking as a way of exalting the Christian faith, though I certainly hope that occurs, but to draw people into looking at an ordinary man who, because he was open to the leading of God, was able to accomplish remarkable heroic things. And he did it without any fanfare and without any subsequent fame or anything else. He just became an extraordinary husband, father, and that is one of the things that I feel like we need in our time and in our society. Mm-hmm. We need to recapture the essence of the family, and he was at the heart and soul of that essence, and it was because of his strength that that young family was able to survive. King Herod went after the family with all of his force and power out to destroy the child, but he failed. And he failed mainly because Joseph was always obedient to God and always moving forward in his life. And so the basic courage and faith, I think, is emblematic of what a man ought to be in our time, and certainly what a husband and a father ought to be. And that actually applies to anybody's faith system. And I would hope that that message comes through on the pages of the book.
And let me ask you, but you indicated you had three adopted children, right?
Yes.
All right, these three children all came from different people. And you found them together. Was there something common, something that you noted that all three of them had that was in them that was of importance to you and importance to the structure of your family?
I would have to confess, Paul, that at the point in time when Tricia and I adopted them, we were young enough to where I really didn't think that deeply about it. What I came to understand was that we were precisely the right parents that those children needed at that point in life. Mm-hmm. And that's why I refer both to Joseph and to me as being designated fathers, designated by God for a purpose with regards to the rearing of those children.
And I guess the point that I'm making here is no matter what we call ourselves in terms of our religious beliefs, that as human beings, there's something common in all of us, something that makes us who we are as people that is appealing and should be and is worth saving. I guess that's really the message here on this holiday season from us. But it's wonderful. Look, I appreciate you being with us. I invite you to keep up the job of teaching and loving us and teaching us how to love no matter where we are from. And I appreciate you joining me here today, Father. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Paul.
It was a pleasure.
It truly has been a blessing to speak with you, and I wish you a Merry Christmas.
Dr. Howard Eddington, author of The Forgotten Man of Christmas. Get his book. You might learn something. Thank you so much for being with us. And, folks, this is the part of the season that I hope never ends, but it does end, and it has to end. And I wish you the best of the holiday season and the best for the rest of the year and for the year to come. God bless you all. We'll see you soon.